good. How you doing, Chad? Hey, Johnny. Cool, man. What's going on? We ready to go or what?
This is Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
This is Scotty Riggs, and you're listening to the two-man power trip of wrestling.
Hey, man, what's up, guys? This is Homicide. Oh, that's my homie, Homicide with a big homie club.
Yeah, that would be it.
Hey, this is David Penzer, and this is the two-man power trip of wrestling.
Well, thank you, thank you. Hear me, fear me.
What's going on, guys? This is a 7 foot, 330-pound DNA of TNA. That's right, my DNA is outer space. And you're listening to the two-man power trip of professional wrestling.
You know, I don't do many wrestling shows anymore, probably because I'm a bit ignorant. You guys probably know 10 times more than I do.
Great talking to you guys. It's been your pleasure.
They've worked in and around the wrestling business. They've studied thousands of hours of wrestling, and now they bring to you the greatest legends, Hall of Famers, creative minds, and both current and future stars of pro wrestling. They are Primetime Pod and Chad, the two-man power trip of wrestling.
Tully Blanchard and his perfect 10, baby doll.
You know, David Crockett, the only thing I do in life is get dressed quick. Yep. You know, I tell you what, Rocky King may someday be a great, great professional wrestler. Today, he's not quite there. You just saw the United States Heavyweight Champion take him apart. But I tell you what, getting back to what we're talking about, the match before mine, Magnum TA, what you did is typical and expected of the former United States Heavyweight Champion. Hey, nobody pulled your string. You just stand there and hold the microphone. Magnum TA, interfering in somebody else's match is the same thing that you and Dusty Rhodes have been doing for a long, long time. You like it. You want matches with no rules. Anything that favors you guys. Well, that's fine. Because I tell you what, the Andersons and myself are ready for any kind of action. Any kind. Whether it be Bunkhouse, Texas Tornado, Texas Death, anything you want to do, because we can get down and be dirty with the dirtiest of them all. But we can also be, ha, as clean as they come. You notice it, baby doll. Ha, little cleavage today, baby. Little bit, ha, too much, too much. Sit in your seats there. Don't let your husbands run wild. You keep your eyes off of her, too. Magnum TA, Dusty Rhodes, if you want to be the United States Heavyweight Champion, I'm not hard to find. I'm in the phone book, Jackson Brown. Come and see me.
This is the two-man power trip of wrestling, brought to you today and powered by Meowbox. Meowbox is a monthly cat subscription box service full of surprises and delivered to your door every single month. And please be sure to stay tuned a little bit later on in this program for a special promotion just for the listeners of the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling, courtesy of Meowbox and Meowbox.com. Now, as that being said, and I always say, my name is Chad, and as always, I'm joined by my tag team partner, Primetime John Paz. But John, this is one intro I never thought we'd end up doing. We are so incredibly blown away to have on the show with us today former NWA Television United States and Tag Team Champion, as well as lifetime member of the Four Horsemen, the man himself, Tully Blanchard, joins us today. And I don't know how you can, but please, I'd ask you at your best to please sum up, if it's even possible, what was going through your head while we were prepping to talk to Tully Blanchard, because my mind was racing a mile a minute and there was about 1,000 questions that I wanted to ask him. But what was going through your mind as we put this show together?
You know, the inner Mark in you comes out. Obviously, you know, we're both longtime fans, and the inner Mark comes out. It's like, oh my God, the Horsemen is the greatest faction of all time. Love the Four Horsemen, love Flair, love Arn, and then you especially, I mean, you love Tully. And it's just so amazing to be able to, you know, get the chance to interview him. So as we're prepping you know, you're thinking about what you're going to say, and just so many thoughts go through your head. I mean, you're thinking about the feud with Dusty, thinking about the feud with Magnum TA, which is totally like unforgettable, just great, great matches. And you're thinking about that steel cage match. So it's pretty amazing. You know, the inner Mark definitely comes out in you as you're like, holy you know, holy crap, I'm about to interview Tully Blanchard, the absolute legendary wrestler, you know, just one of the best ever, and what an honor it was for us to get the chance to interview him.
Now, his role in the Horsemen and his overall aura of being just such an arrogant guy and just, man, you know, the guys, if you weren't trying to be as cool as Tully Blanchard, you wanted to beat his ass because he was just so arrogant and so cocky. But you know what? It really did help his heat out. And when he would take on opponents like Dusty Rhodes or Magnum TA, people wanted to get to Tully Blanchard and kill him. It's kind of like when we were talking about with Don Morocco. It's that heat where you love the babyface so much and you hate the bad guy to a point where you just want to get to him yourself. But Tully was so good at just being a heat magnet. But, you know, it was rolling the Horsemen, like I said. And it's just something that could never be completely filled as other members came in and out.
Well, yeah, you when you really think about it, his role in the Horsemen, irreplaceable, if you really, really think about it. I mean, you got Flair, who's the man, you know, and then you got inner, you know, the guys get kind of like replaced throughout the years. It was Ole, and then you got Barry Windham, and so on and so forth. I mean, I can go down the list, but I'm not going to. But if you really think about it, the two key guys, the two, you know, big cogs in the wheel, if you will, were Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard. They were the two keys to the Four Horsemen, in my view, and obviously Tully's view as well. But without Arn and Tully, the Horsemen just wasn't as good. I mean, you just look at the history of it. It just wasn't, you know, it doesn't really exist without those two, and especially Tully. And you definitely lose something when you don't have Tully in a group. And, you know, no offense to the Sids and the Paul Romas of the world, but, you know, they don't hold a candle to Tully Blanchard. And they weren't as good of a fit with the group as Tully Blanchard was as well, which is, you know, it was just kind of funny because you're trying to get these guys and you're trying to put them in the group and you're trying to get that perfect fit for the Horsemen. And when Tully's not there, you're not going to be able to, you know, get the group the way it was, the original Horsemen or, you know, any Horsemen that involved Tully. So, you know, you can add all these other guys in, but without Arn, and especially without Tully, you're not going to have the classic Four Horsemen, and you're not going to have the best faction possible. And it's funny because you think of the Horsemen, and you think of, you know, the way they dressed, the way they acted, the way they talked, and Tully just fit in with perfect, you know, absolutely perfectly. I mean, he had that aura about him that he was such an arrogant son of a bitch. You know, as you said, he just had that, you know, that cockiness about him, and he was able to get so much heat. It was ridiculous, and it just added, you know, with opponents that he was fighting like Dusty and Magnum and Steamboat and so on and so forth. It just added to the feud, and you know, that's the aura of Tully Blanchard. He was just able to get heat. You just look at him and you're like, oh, this guy's so cocky, I hate him. You know, or he could be one of those guys that you absolutely love to hate. So Tully was the perfect heel, perfect role in the Horsemen, and he was, you know, kind of like the unsung MVP or the unsung hero of the Four Horsemen along with Arn Anderson. And you just, you know, you can't say enough about the Horsemen in general, and you can't say enough about Tully Blanchard.
Yeah, and you mentioned Arn Anderson and being the tag team partner of Tully Blanchard, and when they left to go to the WWF, I mean, the Horsemen were really changed forever because you lost that key dynamic of the two guys, Arn and Tully, two of those constants, and now people can always argue whether or not you swap out Ole for Barry Windham or Barry Windham for, you know, Lex Luger, and even though, you know, Luger wasn't the most loved Horseman ever, it still was a great addition to the group at one point, but, you know, we talked about it with J.J. Dillon, and it's always a question that's just, it's always up for debate, and it's always, it's one of those topics that'll never go away, and what was your favorite Four Horsemen tandem? And, you know, and Tully's answer, I mean, you know, I guess, did it surprise you? I mean, it probably didn't, but did it surprise you? I always love to get the take of the guys that were in the group. Tully, of course, no different, because he was such an integral part of the success in the Four Horsemen. And, you know, he's not shy at what he wants to say about what members belong and what members shouldn't have been in the group. But, yeah, what's your take? Who's your favorite Horseman primetime?
Yeah. Definitely one of our favorite topics, no doubt about it, is talking about the Four Horsemen and who's your favorite and what's the favorite Horseman tandem and you know, to no surprise at all, we learned Tully's favorite horseman, which is pretty much the same as my favorite horseman. And it's pretty funny because we interviewed J.J. Dillon, like you mentioned, and J.J. Dillon said his favorite horseman as well. And me, J.J., and Tully are all in agreement. Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard, Barry Windham, no doubt about it, that's the best horseman ever. You got four guys that are just absolutely unbelievable workers. They could do it all. They could walk it. They could talk it. You know, they're having amazing matches. They're having amazing promos. So you just think about it. My favorite horseman, which is by far the best horseman, and it's funny because the WWE must agree because that's the horseman they inducted into the Hall of Fame as well. It's definitely Flair, Arn, Tully, and Barry Windham. There's no doubt about it. No surprise at all to what Tully said either about it, because, you know, he definitely is in agreement, and there's no surprise at all that that is the greatest four horsemen of all time. Woo!
Hey, you can't go wrong when you agree with Tully Blanchard and J.J. Dillon on the greatest four horsemen combination that there ever was. And I guess that's just a debate that's going to go on for a very long time, because everybody's got their own opinions. And, you know, as you said, no disrespect to Paul Roma earlier in the show, complete disrespect because he didn't belong anywhere near the Four Horsemen. Moving on from Paul Roma, could be the last time he's ever mentioned on this show ever again. But let's talk about somebody who's going to be mentioned on this show quite constantly, and that is our relationship with Meowbox. And Meowbox is giving you, the listener of the Two-Man Power Trip of Wrestling, the ability to get 10% off your first monthly box subscription when you use the code POWERTRIP10 and enter that into the checkout box. That's right, POWERTRIP10 in the checkout box on meowbox.com. 10% off your first monthly box subscription. You can't ask for anything better than that. And we know you do love Meowbox, and you do love meowbox.com, so head on over there. But prime time, tell them a little bit more about Meowbox. Tell them a little bit more about the Two-Man Power Trip of Wrestling and the business that we have to attend to from here on out before we head on over to the legend himself, Tully Blanchard. Prime time, the floor is yours.
Yes, Chad, Meowbox, meowbox.com. They have a service called One Box Can, where every Meowbox purchase, they will donate a can of food to a shelter cat on your behalf, so that is absolutely great. Also with Meowbox, all edible items are made in the USA or Canada, so you know where your items are coming from. Now, I have a very, very picky cat named Lucy, and she has a very special diet, you know, and she can't really go for the edible items so much because of that diet. So what we do is we change out the edible items with toys and surprises, which Lucy loves, and then, you know, mix the perfect marriage there. So it's absolutely perfect that we're able to get toys and surprises with our Meowbox, and that is meowbox.com, promo code POWERTRIP10, all caps, for 10% off your first subscription. That is meowbox.com, promo code POWERTRIP10. Now for some TMPT business, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at Wrestling Pal and at Two Man Power Trip. Subscribe to us on YouTube. We have got great clips up all the time of all of our past guests. And also, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a review. We would love to hear your feedback. And while you're on iTunes, please check out the feed for prior episodes. Now, since this is kind of an NWA flavor here, we got with the legendary Four Horsemen member, Tully Blanchard, one of the best of all time. But let's keep that theme going with some prior guests, like the late great American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, Harley Race, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, Nikita Koloff, Bobby Eaton, and so many more. So please check out the feed on iTunes for some great past episodes. Also, the website, tmptofwrestling.com. That is tmptofwrestling.com. Also, don't forget to check us out on the I-95 Sports Network. Type that into Google and check us out on there. The I-95 Sports Network. We're live and in color, 6 o'clock every Monday, and that is 6 o'clock Eastern on the I-95 Sports Network. And now, without any further ado, this one was an absolute honor, an absolute pleasure. One of the greatest wrestlers of all time, without a doubt. The unsung hero, the MVP of the Four Horsemen, there's no doubt about that. He's a former NWA US champ, former NWA TV champ, He is a former NWA tag team champ, and of course, a former WWF tag team champion as well, and a former WWE Hall of Famer. Now, without any further ado, we send it to one of our favorite guests, one of our best interviews of all time. He is, without a shadow of a doubt, one of the greatest of all time, Tully Blanchard. Please enjoy.
On the line tonight is a man who's an absolute one-of-a-kind legend in the history of professional wrestling. He actually made being a bad guy look cool in an era of excess and excitement. But he's also a founding father of one of the greatest factions in the history of professional wrestling. And not to mention, he's also a former NWA United States television and tag team champion. And additionally, a former WWE Tag Team Champion alongside his partner and fellow Horseman member, Arn Anderson. He's also a WWE Hall of Famer. He is an absolute icon. We are so happy to have him on the show tonight. Tully Blanchard, thank you for joining the two-man power trip of wrestling.
The two-man power trip. That's an awesome name for yourselves. I will say this, though. One of the greatest wrestling factions probably doesn't describe what the Horsemen are. They were the ultimate faction in professional wrestling, or 25 years after the fact, you wouldn't still be talking about them.
That's actually right, because 25, I'm going to add 5 on to that, because we are approaching the 30th anniversary of the formation of the Four Horsemen this coming November. And if that's hard to believe as a fan, I'm sure it's hard to believe looking back. But, you know, we had J.J. Dillon on, of course, your former manager and associate in the Four Horsemen. And he said there was no way in the world that you guys could ever have expected the success of the Four Horsemen when you guys first were in that promo, the syndicated promo, where Arn Anderson famously said the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. But looking back, is J.J. correct in those words?
Absolutely. The thing is this, and I've said this probably 100 times on interviews, it was not a booker, a promoter, or anybody sitting around in a room going, okay, we're going to call these four guys the Four Horsemen. It was Arn Anderson that just said it because we had an 8-man tag match. And we happened to be, I was the only non-Anderson family. Flair was a cousin. Arn and Ole were related. So it was an Anderson clan thing. And we just happened to have all the championship belts, and we were trying to steal a house by not giving away all the matches. And I was fortunate enough to be having a feud with Dusty Rhodes. And so Dusty was in that match, so I got to be in the match. And when Arn called us that, we had no idea that it would catch on, but the wrestling fans caught on. And when the wrestling fans started coming to the arenas, a bunch of college students in coats and ties and sunglasses and holding up horsemen flashcards, you know, it was, I can remember standing in the hallway or the tunnel in Greensboro Coliseum, and Jim Crockett came by and he said, "This thing's really getting over, isn't it?" And I just kind of, in my moderately smart aleck way, rolled my eyes and said, "Yeah, it is." And there's a difference when the fans cause the acceleration to the popularity versus a writing crew sitting in a room going, this is going to get over, and we're going to push it on TV. And it's different. It's just a different thing. And that's why the Horseman is still talked about and still remembered.
Oh, totally. And then when you are a booker in this case, so let's take Dusty, for instance, and he's handed, you know, this instantaneous group that just is over now, and there's people who want to see these four guys together, and you're handing a booker something that he can run with, and, of course, Dusty being, you know, the top babyface at the time, it makes it a little easier. But do you think that Dusty saw you guys together and said, those are my four guys, we're running with these four for the foreseeable future as the top heels for the NWA?
Well, I mean, he didn't really have any choice. I mean, it was when he got the job as booker, he and I wrestled him and Wahoo wrestled Flair, and it turned the territory around and started it in the progress that it was going into. And so then switching Flair heel and bringing in Arn into the territory, and Arn and Ole being a tag team, and the natural family ties between Flair and the Andersons, and then me, because I was wrestling Dusty, is the only reason I was involved. But it was, you know, it was a great spot to be. And I mean, we made people look better than they could make themselves look. And I don't say that very arrogantly, but I do take pride in the ability that Flair had, Arn had, Ole had, then Barry had, and I had to make our opponents bigger-than-life heroes. And that was our job, to sell tickets and to make guys look great. And once you get in that flow, and once the fans got behind it, you know, I mean, it would have been a very tactical error to not push those guys. And there were more guys. I mean, you look at the Midnight Express. You look at Ivan and Nikita Koloff. You look at there are other heels that were over, and Drew Houses and were other parts, and I'm just not remembering back that far, you know, all the guys that were over. But, I mean, it didn't make any difference. It was a great group of wrestlers. The only thing I could compare it to was an old picture my dad had of the territory in Indianapolis in, like, 1961 and 62, and they were playing a softball game, and you had what a crew that you had, from Dick the Bruiser and Bobo Brazil and Sheik and Wilbur Snyder and Nick Bockwinkle and my dad, the Shires brothers, and Cowboy Bob Ellis. I mean, it was everybody, Gene Kaniski, everybody that was anybody in wrestling was in that territory at that time, and they all split out and changed wrestling for the mid-60s all over the country with the territories. And, you know, it was just a massive, talented crew that made WCW what it was at that time, and it was phenomenal to be part of that.
Oh, yeah, the roster is a veritable who's who. You know, the legends, the Hall of Famers, you know, the icons, and all the big names of that era that converged on Crockett Promotions, the NWA, and then into WCW. But what about the chemistry with the four of you guys, the original four? You know, and we've seen documentaries produced by WWE. We've seen other documentaries made where you talk about a day in the life of the Horseman and you guys are running roughshod. But how about the chemistry between the original four and JJ together as a unit, and how you guys really just gelled and worked together?
Well, start with, you know, JJ was my manager after Baby Doll, and when I got in the Horseman, he was, you know, in line to be the Horseman manager. But JJ was one of the greatest managers that this business has ever seen, simply because he was not always trying to be the star. He knew what his role was. He knew what his place and how to accentuate every match that he was a part of. And it was a joy to go to the ring with him because he wasn't trying to steal the show. And that was great. And then you have four guys that basically had the same philosophy in the ring. And that was, how do you make people scream? And you make people scream when baby faces are making comebacks. And we had the ability, whether it was in a tag team, whether it was in a six-man, whether it was in an eight-man, to all follow suit with the flow of what the match was. And you don't necessarily see that too often anymore, whether it's a lost art or whether it's just not being taught. But it is, you know, there's a time for getting heat on your opponent. There's a time for making a comeback. And we all followed together, and it was the chemistry was fantastic. And I think chemistry is probably the key word, because when Arn and I left and went to the WWF at the end of 1988, the Four Horsemen were still there. You still had Flair, you still had Barry, and they tried, I don't know how many guys, big name guys, to put in there to replace Arn and I, and it never worked. They tried to resurrect it time and time and time again, and it never worked. The closest thing is when Arn and I left the WWF to go back and reform it. They hired Arn and didn't hire me, and that was the closest that it came to, because that was the closest chemistry that they had to the original. Did that make sense?
Absolutely, definitely. Now, I was actually going to mention that. It was actually my next point, because I was going to say, if obviously Flair is key, he's integral, he's the man, but Arn and yourself are basically, in my opinion, the two best workers, you know, the two great talkers, the keys to the team. But, you know, without you guys, they aren't quite what they were. So who is, you know, your ideal horseman? I'm sure you get access a million times, but who's your favorite group of the bunch? Was it the original, or did you like having maybe Barry Windham a part of the group?
Well, the greatest group of guys, okay, most talented guys, most flexible guys, was the group that went into the Hall of Fame, which was Barry. With Rick, Arn, and I, the original four was a different dynamic, because Arn and Ole were the tag team, and because of the Ole's in the ring philosophy, the tag team had to follow that dynamic. It was a little bit more grinding it out type stuff, whereas when Barry became part of the Horsemen, he became the other single. Arn and I gravitated to the tag team, and the tag team, just because of different styles, Ole had a different style than I had. We were more flexible to the opponents that we could wrestle. I mean, we looked just as good against the Rock and Roll as we did against Animal and Hawk, or Demolition, or Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty. So you've got two ends of the spectrum on the things that you could accentuate in your opponents. And but I think that we had the greatest amount of diversity and flexibility when you had Barry in as part of the horse.
Definitely, no doubt. That's probably the four best workers, too, yourself, Arn, Flair, and Barry. Just unbelievable as a tandem. But you made a point about, you know, when they almost tried to reform the Horsemen, or, well, they did, but they didn't have you reform it in 1990 when you came back after being from the, you know, gone. He went to the WWE or WWF at the time. What happened then? And, you know, obviously they rehired Arn. They beat up Sting and that big angle on Clash of Champions. But you are nowhere to be found. Were you backstage that night?
No, I was not. I was. I had flunked the drug test with the WWF, and they had suspended me 22 days before I was Arn and I were going to reappear, and they tried to play major hardball and get me to take a lot less money than what they'd agreed to us for us to give our notice to Vince. And, you know, I mean, in those days, it was not I'm not proud of flunking a drug test. You know, I was a social cocaine user, and I flunked a drug test in Madison, Wisconsin, and then WCW tried to use it as a power play. They guaranteed Arn and I $750,000 over 3 years, and then they tried to they did, and this is probably the biggest regret I have in my life, is that they used my mistake and on leverage on Arn, and it cost him $150,000 over the next 3 years. And you know, and they didn't come back to me until probably a year later trying to hire me back. And they wanted to hire me back for $500 a day, and that was crazy when they were giving big money to other people, so that wasn't about to happen. But it was just greed got involved on their part, trying to save money as a company, and they should have, in my opinion, they should have hired me back. They'd have made way more money. But anyway.
You see, that angle was set up perfectly because Sting thinks he's in the Horsemen. And, you know, Flair, Arn, and Ole, they beat him up. And it would have been perfect if you came in as well. But obviously WCW screwed that up. And eventually, I believe Sid would be put in the group. And he kind of didn't make sense with them. And he didn't fit with them at all. And, you know, they just never were able to get, you know, a really, really good Horsemen again, obviously without you a part of it. But was there ever any truth to the rumor that they were going to bring you back later on? I guess towards the mid-90s to late-90s, you guys were going to reform, and then you guys were going to basically feud with the NWO?
Nobody ever contacted me about that.
So yeah, it was an internet rumor at the time. I was just always curious about it because that kind of would have been cool because, you know, they were doing the whole tradition bikes thing, and you know, they had the whole mock horseman thing, and it would have been cool to bring you back and almost have you you, Flair, and Arn, and obviously maybe Benoit or something, rid WCW of the NWO once and for all, you know, for tradition's sake. But I guess that rumor, you know, never actually true.
Yeah, I mean, they never contacted me. I mean, the only time that they contacted me and I flew to Atlanta and met with them was the getting ready for the pay-per-view, and I don't remember what year it is, but they had Paul Roma walk out instead of me, and but they knew that they weren't going to hire me because I sent them emails. I sent them a certified letter that I would not be there. I did not accept their offer. $500 a day, and that was the. But they kept insinuating in their advertisements that I was going to come back. And when Paul Roma walked out, it was unfair to him. It would have been unfair to anybody that walked out at that point in the Omni that night. But it was. I don't think it got over very well.
Ooh, Paul Roma, another guy that I really don't think fit, you know, with the Horsemen as well. And I remember kind of thinking that it was going to be you and Arn again. you know, possibly winning the WWE tag titles and so on, but it wasn't. There was another guy in the Horsemen that I actually think kind of fit well, and that was right after Ole left. That was Lex Luger. Did you like his, you know, his part in the group? Do you think he fit in well with the Horsemen?
Not particularly. But at that time, the Horsemen thing was so hot, and the dynamics of Rick, Arn, and myself, you know, it continued. And but when we did the thing and turned Barry heel, that was the best. I mean, it was unexpected. That was, you take Barry Windham, one of the greatest performers that the business has ever seen, and make him part of our group. You know, he was a little bit different. He was younger. He was long haired. The rest of us didn't really. I guess Flair had long hair at the time too. But you know, Arn and I, and you know, we were all a little bit cut out of the same mold. But then Barry came and was just this young, dynamic, handsome guy that was a huge babyface that just switched heel. That just made, wow, it made a lot of sense and caught a lot of people off guard, and it was pretty awesome.
Yes, definitely. That was an awesome turn, and that was an awesome Horseman. But you almost can't talk Horseman. I know Chad brought him up before without talking about Dusty Rhodes, and you and Dusty had an awesome feud for the TV title that felt like, you know, lasted, I guess it really did, lasted about a year or so. I mean, it was just awesome feud between you guys, great, you know, blood feud. What are your memories of Dusty? Because obviously, you know, he's gone too soon, and he's one of the greatest of all time.
Oh, absolutely. Dusty was probably the greatest talker. This business has had some really great talkers. But, you know, Dusty was, I mean, he was flamboyant. He was just his persona, his character, his the son of the plumber, the great American dream, and the way he delivered it was just awesome. And then when he became the booker for us, it was, there's some personal stuff that he and I talked about that I think made him get over even to a different degree. Because back in those days, you know, the TV title was one fall, 20 minutes. And if you didn't beat me in 20 minutes, I won the match. That was kind of the gimmick. All I had to do was get a time limit and I won. And it wasn't a time limit draw type thing in the record, like the records actually meant something. But, and I told Dusty, I said, Dusty, nobody thinks you can go 20 minutes. And he and I wrestled 20-minute time limits and long matches that nobody expected him to be able to do. And it just really aided to his credibility. And so we wrestled, and then he'd wrestle somebody else for a little bit. And then he and I would come back, and we had the match for Baby Doll. Then we had the First Blood match, and then we had the barbed wire matches. And then he'd wrestle somebody else for a little bit. I'd go wrestle somebody else for a little bit. And then we'd come back again. And, I probably had the longest feud with Dusty of anybody in professional wrestling. It was just a joy to go out and make people scream as you were getting green elbow pad. It was just a neat time in this business.
Yeah, looking back, you versus Dusty is an awesome feud, and then you think of Dusty, you think of him versus Slayer as well. But both those feuds were amazing. But you can't really talk about Tully Blanchard and feuds without talking about the big guy, Magnum PA. That awesome feud you guys had, just unbelievable. The chemistry you guys had, and almost the perceived hatred you guys had for one another. But what was it like feuding with Magnum TA back then? Because it felt like watching those matches back, you guys couldn't miss.
Well, it was the thing that was so the intensity was so evident, and it was and he actually beat the crap out of me every night. So, you know, I needed drugs and alcohol just to endure it. You guys didn't laugh at that. That was a joke.
I thought you were saying that horseman lifestyle there.
But it was, you know, the cage match was, I know that the WWE still has it on greatest cage matches of all time and all that kind of stuff, and they still sell that match. And it was as intense and as powerful a match and a feud that I can ever remember seeing or being part of. And, you know, it was, I don't know how long it lasted, but I mean, right up to the time when Baby Doll snuck in with the police uniform on and handed me the roll of quarters and I won the U.S. title, from him. And, you know, it is from that point on, it was just phenomenal. And it's evident because people still talk about it today. And it,
yeah,
that is probably 85. That is what, 30 years?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Starrcade 1985, the I Quit cage match. And, you know, it's funny because you still look at it today. It holds up great. It's still one of the greatest cage matches of all time. And
I still never said I quit.
Oh, I was actually going to say a little controversy. You beat me to the punch, yeah. I believe you said yes, right? You never said I quit.
That's absolutely right. It wasn't a yes match. Whoever says yes first, it was an I quit match. You had to say I quit. And I just said yes. And the referee stole that from me and robbed me.
Now, was that a part of the plan, you know, so to speak, for you to save some face a little bit, or was that really the referee kind of just thinking that you said I quit?
What do you think?
I think that's great heel, you know, heel workmanship. That, yet, you know, I'm going to say face a little bit. I'm just going to say yes. You're going to call for the bell. Now, Mike Mooneyham, you know, the legendary writer, he actually brought this up to us when we interviewed him not too long ago. He said that the feud between you and Magnum still exists today, so to speak. Is that actually true?
I don't think it does.
Well, I think he was saying a little bit sarcastically because I guess you guys still have a relationship now.
Yeah, we have a bit of a relationship. He's married to the mother of my children, and as I told my children as they have gotten older, I'm glad that he's married to her and I'm not. And so, you know, I mean, I hope that doesn't offend her or offend anything, but it's the truth. And I have no ill will. I have nothing but the best. I mean, my children's mother, I want her to be healthy and prosper and be a good mom to my children. She has two children with Terry, and I want, you know, they deserve a good mother and a great situation. I know that there was time that Terry was the father figure to my children because they were so young and didn't know any different. And but it is, you know, that's just kind of things that life has dealt me, good, bad, or indifferent. And I have a great relationship with four wonderful children. My youngest daughter just turned 18 in July, and she moved to live in San Antonio with me 2.5 years ago. My son has been living with me since he was 15 and is prospering and doing just awesome. And he struggled in high school with drugs, and he's been 3.5 years sober, which is just unbelievable. He's very, very successful in working for a fireplace and patio furniture store in Austin, Texas. My oldest daughter has a wonderful husband and lives in Charlotte. And my middle daughter is trying to uphold the Blanchard wrestling name. And the few times that I've seen her is improving and doing great. And, you know, I hope that someday she would get a contract with the WWE and be able to take it to a different level. And, you know, I couldn't ask for really anything more than having a restored relationship with my four children. And they are great kids, and they wouldn't be who they are without their mom. And, you know, and we're all products of our decisions, and that's where my life is today at 61. And I'm happy and content.
Yeah, and, you know, you mentioned your daughter, Tessa, who is really making a name for herself on the independent scene and carrying the Blanchard name on, you know, into the next decades. But when Tessa wanted to get involved in the wrestling business and carry on the family lineage, what was your reaction to that? Was that something you were happy to see?
Well, it is. I tell her this all the time, okay? Anybody that has the absolute greatest success in wrestling, it's still a short career. I mean, my career was 13 years. Okay? And I told her that I want her to pursue her dreams, but do not neglect your education. I don't want her to get to be 28, 29 years old at the end of a wrestling career and then not have anything, not have education to fall back on or anything like that. And if she wants to truly emulate me or have anything to do with her lineage, her grandfather graduated from high school, graduated from college, and then went to wrestling. I graduated from college and then went to wrestling. And I want her to get her education. She has time during the day to get classes and do it online or however she does it. But get that education, get something that she can fall back on, and when the wrestling career is over with, she doesn't miss a step and then have to go learn something. Does that make sense?
Perfect sense.
And yeah. And her following a dream, I'm proud of her for doing that. And I live in Texas, and she's in North Carolina, so I don't get to see a lot of her matches and stuff like that, but I've been to a couple of clinics and I've done a couple of seminars where she has been, and she has talent, and but she's also got a good gene pool.
Definitely. It's in the blood, so to speak. So, you know, the thing for a talent today is to get to the WWE, and they've got a phenomenal developmental system. But when you made it to the WWE, when it was the WWF, you know, it was a really big move because you and Arn were two names that were so synonymous with the NWA at that point in that era that it was a huge jump. So one, if you could sum it up, you know, discuss the jump and actually being paired with Bobby the Brain Heenan, who was maybe, the WWF's version of J.J. Dillon in terms of the lead manager role at that point?
Absolutely. I mean, it was kind of I don't know what the right adverb would be, but the first night we wrestled in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and they did TV, and Arn and I came out, there was a bunch of people with horseman signs in the audience, and they had ushers running around pulling the horseman signs down, which I understand. I mean, it's the competing company. But it was the same style and the same talent that made us stars with the NWA, made us stars with the WWF. And it was a thrill to be able to go places that I never would have got to go. I never would have got to go to Madison Square Gardens and perform. I would have never been able to go to some of the great arenas in this country, Maple Leaf Gardens in Toronto, and the hockey arena in Montreal, and if we wouldn't have went to the WWF, and it just wrestling fans liked wrestling. And when you could produce and get them out of their seats to scream, they liked that. And wrestling fans are wrestling fans. And it was proud to be able to perform for them, to entertain them, and give them their money's worth every night. And then it's an honor to be remembered so many years after the fact.
Right, and that run, you know, if you look at it, you know, really wasn't too long in terms of years, but, you know, the amount of programming the WWF had at the time and all the house show matches that were being taped is off the charts, and it feels like you guys were there for so much longer. And as a fan growing up, I mean, you know, when you saw the Brainbusters were going to be on the show, you knew it was going to be probably either the best match of the night or at least the most entertaining. But when you met with Vince and you guys were going to be paired together as a team, which was, you know, a great move, and he said, we have some young tag teams here, and there's one we want you to work with. They're two kids. They've been around a couple territories, and one you might know well from Texas. But when you guys started working with the Rockers, was that something that you guys knew? They're giving us the ball to get these guys over and maybe help this next generation of superstars really become, you know, a big deal, especially in that company.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was not just get them over. It was getting both of us over because you sell excitement. And it was an awesome. Those two guys were. I mean, Shawn Michaels. You see what his career ended up being. He's just a super super legend talent in this business. And Marty Jannetty had tremendous charisma, and those guys were a great tag team together. And I think that Arn and I showcased them for all the matches that we had the first 3 or 4 months when we were up with the WWF. And, you know, and then we went to the Bushwhackers, which was a little bit of a different challenge. And then we wrestled Demolition for the championships on Saturday night's main event three times and finally won the belts and had a program with them. And then Arn and I were going to go back and reform the Four Horsemen, and that didn't just work out the way we wanted it, or the way we planned, or the way I planned. That's the way I planned. There you go.
Now, is there besides that, you know, the 2 out of 3 falls match on Saturday night's main event? You guys had a lot of great matches with the Rockers, both, you know, televised either on, you know, national TV or, like I said, a house show. But is there one match during your WWF tenure that really stands out to you as like, wow, that was like our defining moment in terms of the biggest stage with the WWF?
Oh, it's probably the 20-minute time limit in Madison Square Garden is the first time we wrestled there. We wrestled Sean and Marty, and the reaction was just phenomenal. And, you know, that certainly sets out being in Madison Square Garden. And then I think probably the time in San Francisco at the Cow Palace, we were doing a taping, and we did a pull-apart with Sean and Marty, and I don't know that they quite had pull-aparts that were like that, just because I didn't watch their show, but they may have. But that was pretty intense. We took the intensity level up a bit. And that was pretty memorable.
As we start to wind it down here, one thing, you know, very, very curious, especially with a legend of your stature, you know, you've wrestled everywhere. You've been around the world. You've wrestled, you know, many of the greats that you mentioned, Dusty and Magnum, and we just talked about the Rockers and Demolition. And we even forgot to mention a great feud you had with Ricky Steamboat. And I distinctly remember a crazy match you had for WCW, actually. I believe it was in 94 against Terry Funk. But do you have a favorite match or matches that you had in your career?
Oh, gosh. I've had so many. I've had the privilege of working with so many great, great legends in the business at that time. And, you know, I was just fortunate to be in the right place at the right time and then be able to follow up and wrestle these guys. And, golly, it was a tremendous time to be part of the wrestling as the territories went away and it became national promotions. Professional wrestling became chic, it wasn't that fake stuff that is out at the fairgrounds. It was at all the major coliseums and sold out arenas, and the business just took on a different personality during that time, and to be part of it is just, you know, you could never forget it. And, you know, I was telling somebody not too long ago, and I don't remember where it was, but, you know, there for about a 3 or 4 year period, I cannot remember wrestling in front of a not sold out arena. And that was every night of the week, and that was twice on Sundays. And, you know, I just don't remember when an arena wasn't sold out. And some of those memories in my early career, I mean, we outnumbered the wrestling fans sometimes in some of the cities. And, you know, it was just a great, great time to be in wrestling.
No doubt about that. It was absolutely amazing. And one thing I was always curious about, because obviously you and Arn, obviously, was one of the greatest teams of all time, the Horsemen and then with the Brainbusters, but you had some, you know, great teammates all the way back in the Southwest Championship Wrestling days when you were, you know, the dynamic duo with Gino Hernandez, which is just a perfect duo, and you even teamed with your dad a few times. But do you have a favorite tag partner you've had? Is it Arn?
I think that Arn would definitely be it. It was... we complimented each other. We both didn't try to do the same thing. Gino and I, we both kind of had the same style. So you, even though we were successful in that time, but we didn't really have the ability to go wrestle, say, the Road Warriors, like we did when Arn and I were together. And, you know, it would have been great if Gino would have come to work for Crockett. I mean, we called him and asked him, and he was too locked in Dallas and didn't want to move, and and was doing well and not having to work real hard. And so he stayed there and ultimately ended up dying way before he was should have. But he was a great talent. And but I definitely think that, Arn and I were the strongest tag team, and if not the best tag team of all time, we were arguably the greatest tag team of all time.
Definitely. I mean, you can make an argument that when you guys fought the Midnight Express before you left, you know, for the WWF at one point, that that was, you know, arguably the two greatest teams ever wrestling each other. And obviously it only happened for the brief time because you went on to the WWF, but, you know, many people can make that argument.
Absolutely.
Now, with, you know, you said you're down in San Antonio, and obviously Southwest Championship Wrestling was big in San Antonio. Do you own the footage? Because I would love to see that, you know, somehow end up in, you know, on the WWE Network like all these other promotions are on the WWE Network. Is that possible? Do you own the footage?
Well, actually, I have no idea where the footage is. My dad either sold it or gave it away, not understanding what he actually had. And there was some good stuff. You know, I mean, with where the USA Network is today, the first year was Southwest Championship Wrestling. And I just wish my dad and I would have had the wherewithal to make it work. And we didn't have the funds, and maybe had the wherewithal, we just didn't have the funding. And then Vince took over the show and has certainly made an empire out of it. And, you know, hats off to him.
Definitely. I mean, he saw cable, I guess, that, you know, as the future there. Did you and your dad, perhaps, because you guys were on USA First, obviously, did you see cable as being, you know, the future of wrestling, or you needed to be on cable TV?
It was... Dad and I didn't really talk a lot about that kind of stuff. I was handling the ring, I mean the matches and TV show, and he handled that side of it. You know, I wish I'd have been a much better partner than I was, because I was too busy learning how to be a star and acting like one. And so I wouldn't have been a very good business partner at that time. And but it, you know, all things work out the way they're supposed to. I mean, my dad ended up, when my brother was killed, ended up coming to know Christ. And then, you know, when I went through the drug test and not having a job, I came to meet Christ November 13th, 1989. And both of my dad and mine life were directed in a different direction, and it wasn't the wrestling business anymore. And it has been, you know, it was great. And I got to spend the last 3 months of my dad's life helping take care of him. And then it ended up, you know, the last 8 months of my mom's life, two, and they both passed away in 2012, and it was a very, very good time, both of my parents, that I was able to share with them, and I know that my mom sewed into my son's life and really helped his turnaround. And, you know, it was just a great part, great time to be part of this family. And, you know, if we could have made it happen, we would have. But, you know, I'd rather be where I am with Christ doing what I do today rather than having a bigger wrestling empire.
I got you. I totally get you on that. But before we get to, you know, what you're doing today, I just wanted to ask one more question, from me, from my end, because very, very curious. I would guess it would be Magnum, but who was your favorite opponent? I know you had a ton of good ones, but would it be Magnum?
I don't know that it would be Magnum. I went from a feud with Ricky Steamboat to a feud with Magnum. One was great matches, and I didn't get beat up. And the other was great matches, and I got beat up every night. But it was, you get to wrestle Robert Gibson and Ricky Morton, which are phenomenal talents in the ring, and you wrestle them every night. You wrestle Magnum T.A. and have a great match. You wrestle Ricky Steamboat and have a great match. You wrestle people of that caliber, and Dusty and Nikita Koloff even. And, there were so many of them, it's hard to say. Yeah, I had a favorite. I mean, if there was a guy that you went out in the ring with that oozed sympathy, the greatest opponent was probably Ricky Morton. I mean, if you couldn't get heat beating up Ricky Morton, you couldn't get heat. And, he was a handsome guy that knew how to perform, and every girl in the audience was just chomping at the bit every time you beat him up. And, it's hard to say, yeah, this was my favorite, because there were so many favorites.
I could definitely see that. I mean, and you mentioned Ricky Steamboat, who was, arguably one of the best ever. And you guys had great chemistry as well. I know we were talking about Magnum and stuff. We almost skipped over Steamboat, who, obviously is going to go down as an all-time great there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's tragic that his career was cut short. And that was a sad thing. But, the chemistry of the company, we still sold tickets. And when Tully Blanchard left wrestling, they still sold tickets and didn't miss a step. And you look at wrestling today, we went to the Orange Bowl in Miami and sold 50,000 tickets. It wasn't sold out. And I went to the Sunrise Stadium in 2012, and there were 74,000 tickets bought, and they weren't at $10 a head either. And, this business was and is a tremendous, tremendous entertainment setting. I wish that we could get the credit that we're due. I think that you look at how Academy Awards and all that kind of stuff, and you got to do 25 retakes every time you made a mistake, and when you're in front of a live audience, you don't get retakes. You don't get to do it over. And nobody understands the talent that it takes to go out and perform for 30 minutes or 45 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever in front of a live audience and keep them engaged with what you're doing for that time. And if it was easy, anybody'd do it.
Very true.
Without a doubt. Now, Tully, you mentioned when you left wrestling went on without you, but what did you go on to do following your wrestling career, and what are you still doing to this day?
Well, I mean, November 13th, 1989, when I found out that WCW had reneged on the deal, I laid in bed for, Flair called me at 1 in the morning, and for 3 hours I laid in bed trying to figure out what I was going to do with life, and I never came up with a plan for the first time. And at 4:03 in the morning, I said, Jesus, take over my life. And it was the first time I'd ever said the name Jesus when I wasn't cussing somebody. And I'd never been to church and wasn't raised in that vein. My parents, in my mind and in my interpretation, when my brother was killed in 1978, they went and got religion and didn't understand that really. And so I went on. And then when I said those five words, something happened to me that the emotional chaos in my life stopped, and there was a calmness that came over me. And as I tell people all across this country in prisons, I said my life took a different path right then. And at 61 years old, it has brought me back to this prison yard and doing and telling you my story in hopes that somebody could say, I think my path needs to be changed. And that's what I do. I go through the doors that the Lord is opening for me, and I tell my story wherever I can, because the only thing that will put somebody's life on track is if a person quits being the center point and God does become the center point. Now, I'm not talking about the religious fanatics that cause terrorism and that kind of stuff, because if you fall in love with the only true and living God, he says, love your neighbors as you love yourself. So the first commandment is love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and body, and love your neighbors as you love yourself. And that is not a religious maniac cutting people's heads off, if that made any sense. I hope that wasn't a political statement.
No, not at all. No, it makes perfect sense. And I'll tell you what, you know, I like to usually, it's going to be my next to last question, but, you know, I like to ask, you know, what's your legacy on wrestling? Obviously, wrestling is a small part of your whole entire, you know, life picture and everything that you do, because obviously you have gone on to do some wonderful things for many, many people, and it's fantastic to hear that post-wrestling, you know, you're making such a difference. But just to touch on wrestling and your father's legacy, yourself, and moving on to your daughter, the Blanchard name in the annals of pro wrestling, at the end of the day, what will everyone say? What will the general consensus be on the Blanchard family and the impact they made on professional wrestling?
Well, I think you would be a better answer of that than I would, because I don't really know. You know, my dad started wrestling in 1954. Stu Hart broke him in after he played football up in Canada. And I was fortunate enough I was fortunate enough to have my dad know that promotion was where the money really was made. He got in the promotion business, and then I was going to go ahead and learn the wrestling business so that I could be in the promotion business. So I learned it, and somewhere in there I learned how to sell tickets, and don't really know how and why, but I was very fortunate. And I'm very, very fortunate that 22 years after my career was over, I was inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame with four other guys that were a huge part of my life.
Yeah, that's it's phenomenal. And I will say, from my personal point of view, I would say wrestling royalty, if that's allowable. Before I ask this question, now we've talked about the Four Horsemen, we talked about the dynamic duo, but how about a group of guys that I know, this is always one of my favorite topics for professional wrestlers from West Texas State University. How many wrestlers could possibly come out of one school? And when you're lining up to get on a football field and you look across and you see Tully Blanchard and you see Ted DiBiase and you see Tito Santana and you know that guys like Stan Hansen have worn that uniform and Dick Murdoch and so many guys, what is it about West Texas State University that just spawned so many careers in professional wrestling?
Probably the proximity to the Funks. I know that I ended up going there because Terry called my dad and said, "What are you doing?" Because I was leaving, I was transferring from SMU after Hayden Fry got fired, and I was going to go to a small school down in San Marcos because it was close to home, and they could, my mom and dad could come watch me play, and Terry called my dad and said, "Why not Tully come up here and play?" And so I drove up and kind of had a tryout. And they offered me a scholarship, and so I went up there and played. But you know, I mean, you got Bruiser Brody was there, Frank Goodish. You got the Funks. You've got Tito Santana. You've got Stan Hansen. You've got Manny Fernandez went there. You had a good list going there. DiBiase went there, and who else went there? Surely there was somebody else.
Oh my goodness! Oh gosh, you named some of the ones that really stand out, John. Does anybody else come to mind on your end?
Did you say Dick Murdoch, and did he go there?
I went there. Dick Murdoch claimed to go there, but I'm not sure that he ever enrolled there.
Okay.
What a school.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
But he lived pretty close to Canyon.
That's a battle royal right there. You could book that one, but I don't know who's going over. But if I was booking it right now, Tully Blanchard's my winner. And before we let you go, just please tell the listeners.
Since I never won a battle royal, I might be one of the last couple in the ring because I always did the job good. But it certainly wouldn't be the winner.
you're gonna double team somebody. You're gonna sucker punch the guy that you're double teaming with, and then you're going to throw everybody over. Tully Blanchard's your winner, but please tell the listeners of the two-man power trip of wrestling where they can find Tully Blanchard.
You know, I'm pretty easy to find. I get two or three letters a day at my home. I don't know how people get my home address, but they do. So I'm easy to find. And Facebook people message me and stuff, and I don't post a lot, but I do answer messages, and on Twitter, you know, you can find me on all that stuff. I'm just not real active, and you guys have to promise to have me back on when I finish my book around the end of the year.
Oh, you kidding me? It's an open invitation. Any minute you want, you're back.
Well, I appreciate that, and I'm finally, after, 25, 26 years, I'm finally going to write a book because I think I finally have something to write about, so...